Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, what is special about the way the Museum of Jewish Heritage in New York tells the story of the Holocaust? The Museum of Jewish Heritage in New York City was created as a living memorial to those who perished during the Holocaust. The museum honors those who died by celebrating their lives, cherishing the traditions that they embraced, examining their achievements and faith, and affirming the vibrant worldwide Jewish community that is their legacy today. New generations are taught how to recognize and fight contemporary instances of injustice and oppression. The mission of the museum is to educate people of all ages and backgrounds about the broad tapestry of Jewish life in the 20th and 21st centuries, before, during, and after the Holocaust. Multiple perspectives on modern Jewish history, life, and culture are presented in the museum's core exhibition and special exhibitions. Public programs, including discussions, films, plays, and concerts, highlight the richness of Jewish culture and ideas. The mission of the Auschwitz Jewish Center in Poland is to provide visitors with an opportunity to memorialize victims of the Holocaust through the study of the life and culture of a formerly Jewish town, and to offer educational programs that allow new generations to explore the meaning and contemporary implications of the Holocaust. Fellowships are offered for students and young professionals of all backgrounds who would like to participate in any of their on-site educational programs. We spoke with Shiri Sandler, the U.S. Director of the Center, about the Museum of Jewish Heritage and the Auschwitz Jewish Center in Poland.
Thank you very much for speaking with us today. You are the United States Director of the Auschwitz Jewish Center of the Museum of Jewish Heritage, but first I would like to speak with you a little bit about the museum itself. Can you tell us when and why and who created it?
Sure. So the museum opened its doors in 1997. It's the first building of the Museum of Jewish Heritage was the building that is today the core exhibition. It's a three-story building with six sides. Each side has six windows and a ziggurat-shaped six-level roof that stands for the 6 million. It was developed by an order of the City of New York. It came out of the desire to have a memorial and education center here in New York City to represent the Holocaust and to represent especially the families of those who lived here who had perished during the Holocaust. We have now also a second building, the Robert M. Morgenthau Wing, which was the first construction that broke ground downtown after 9/11. And this building has special exhibition space, our classrooms, a beautiful theater for concerts and plays, as well as a garden designed by the noted landscape designer, Andy Goldsworthy, which has 18 boulders with trees growing out of them, signifying the triumph of life out of the ashes.
Do you get a lot of visitors? I don't know how well known this museum is, because there is the Jewish Museum in New York, and this actually is a museum that I didn't know about myself.
So the Jewish Museum is an art museum. It's located uptown. We get about 150,000 visitors per year. 50,000 of those visitors are school children. And every child who comes through this museum with a school group gets a guided tour from a very educated docent. So we have a significant number of visitors. You know, we're not a New York City public institution. We're not a Smithsonian. So, of course, our visitorship has to take those constraints into account. But I think especially when you consider our educational visitorship, it's significant.
Do you know where most of the visitors are from?
I can't tell you specifically, but especially when you take into account the school kids, the majority are from the tri-state area.
Tell us about the core exhibition.
Sure. So our core exhibition is three floors. It begins with Jewish life a century ago. The second floor is the war against the Jews. And the third floor is Jewish renewal, life after the war. Our core exhibition comes from a very specific viewpoint. And this is actually what distinguishes us from most other Holocaust institutions. We are not telling the story of how the Nazis enacted the Holocaust against the Jews. We are telling the story of who these people were, how they responded, what it felt like, what the Jewish experience in the Holocaust was, and then how the Jewish community was rebuilt and has taken the lessons of the Holocaust into account in their worldview in terms of social justice and being aware of others' oppression. So the first floor introduces viewers to Jewish culture and Jewish life, talking about what Jewish beliefs are, talking about the Jewish year, the Jewish life cycle. It's a beautiful collection of Judaica, but also of objects that speak to the vanished Jewish history of Europe. I think the most incredible object on the first floor is a hand-painted silk sukkah that was made in Hungary in the 1920s. And you can see in this sukkah both the prayers that need to be said on the holiday of Sukkot, but also scenes, these incredible scenes of stories from the Bible and also of Jewish life in Hungary at the time. This object is actually on loan to us from the family, from the grandsons of the man who painted it. So it gives you, that should give you a sense of what the first floor is like. We also talk on that floor about both opportunity and opposition, so where Jewish life thrives and why immigration came into play when anti-Semitism began to rear its head, to give people an understanding of what's going to come on the second floor. The second floor, as I said, is the war against the Jews, and it gives you a sense of how the Holocaust developed and how the Holocaust was experienced by the Jews of Europe. So on the second floor, you experience the rise of Nazism through objects. We're a very object-heavy institution, and actually all of our objects on the label that tells you the story of the object, the vast majority of our objects have a picture on that label of the object donor. So you get to see the faces of these people and understand their lives a little bit better. As an example, on the second floor, in the case that talks about Jewish response to persecution in Germany during the rise of Nazism, there's a set of handmade felt flowers. These felt flowers were made by a Jewish woman in Oppeln, Germany in the late 1930s. She and her family were waiting for visas to the United States, and while they were waiting, she took a class to learn how to make something with her hands, you know, so that she would have a trade when she went to America. She had never made anything like this before, and she was so proud of herself that she sent these flowers to a sister-in-law of hers in a nearby city to say, you know, look what I've done. She and her family were never able to get out, and she eventually died in Auschwitz in 1944. Now, I tell you this specific story because I think it's a great example of how we tell the story of the Holocaust on that floor, but also because that woman was my great-grandmother.
Wow.
And every object in our collection is someone's, the way those flowers are mine. That every object in our collection tells a story and introduces you to a person who may have survived, a person who may have perished. And so we really try to personalize this history, and I think that's what sets us apart from so many other Holocaust institutions. We want you to see faces. We want you to see individual stories and to recognize the individual losses. When we get up to the third floor, we talk about, as I said, Jewish renewal after the war, which means the development of the State of Israel, but also it's really focused on the idea of social justice and on Jewish contributions in the 20th century. So we talk, among other things, about Ethiopian Jewry going to Israel. We talk about Jewish activity during the Civil Rights Movement. We talk about contemporary genocide. We really want people to understand the lessons of the Holocaust and the key lesson being to be aware of and be active against others' oppression today.
Do you also talk about Jewish renewal in Europe?
We do. We have images, actually, of Jewish life throughout the world in that space, and so you get a sense of Jewish populations in European countries, as well as what life looks like around the world. And while the second floor, of course, is pretty focused on the Ashkenazi experience, we do have objects on the first floor and on the third floor that talk about the Sephardi experience as well.
Tell me about the special exhibitions, because you touched on this a little bit, but I've noticed that you have topics that have ranged from Jewish resistance during the Holocaust, but then the experience also of European Jews who found refuge in America and taught in the Jim Crow South.
Sure. We have a wide variety of special exhibitions. So we both have special exhibitions that we've designed ourselves and that then will travel, as well as special exhibitions that come from other institutions. Currently, we have two special exhibitions on view and one about to open. The first is called A Town Known as Auschwitz, The Life and Death of a Jewish Community. This exhibition was designed by our staff, and it tells the story of the Jewish community of Oświęcim, the town in Poland better known as Auschwitz. We also have on view Designing Home, Jews and Mid-Century Modernism, which has come to us from San Francisco. So you can see it was created by the Contemporary Jewish Museum in San Francisco. So you can see we try to showcase a wide variety of Jewish heritage in our exhibitions. As you mentioned, our past special exhibitions that we have designed include Daring to Resist, Jewish Defiance During the Holocaust, and From Swastika to Jim Crow, which is about Jewish professors who left Nazi Germany and found employment in historically black universities here in America. That exhibition has received great traction and has traveled widely around the United States, which we are thrilled by. That's an exhibition that has found a home in many different populations and has a lot of resonance with many different groups. And that's one of the goals of those kinds of exhibitions for us, that they impact many kinds of people.
And you also have public programs.
We have quite a variety of public programs. As I mentioned, we have a fantastic theater, and our theater hosts everything from film premieres to book talks to children's programming. We actually have a very rich calendar for young families in the neighborhood, especially on Sundays. We try to have our theater be the home of a wide variety of modern Jewish programming that doesn't just speak to the Holocaust, but speaks to Jewish heritage in many forms.
Now, can you tell us more specifically about the Auschwitz Jewish Center that you are the director of?
Yes. So the Auschwitz Jewish Center is a museum, synagogue, and education center in Oświęcim, Poland, the town better known by its German name, which was Auschwitz. This institution opened in 2000 in the last standing synagogue in the town of Oświęcim and in a Jewish home next door. It came under the auspices of the Museum of Jewish Heritage in 2006, and since then has grown enormously. Last year in May, we opened a brand new core exhibition in the synagogue, which tells the complete story of the Jews of Oświęcim from the town's founding in the 1300s through Jewish settlement in the 1500s, through the Holocaust, through the communist period, and into today. We also opened a new building at the center, as we refurbished the home of the last Jew of Oświęcim, Shimon Kluger, who died in 2000. On his death, his family gave us his home. In 2014, we were able to finally save it as it was on the verge of collapse and open in it a new exhibition space and cafe, which is a meeting place for visitors from the outside world and for local people to really have a chance to exist in the same space, to discuss, to go to classes together. And it's been an incredible success. The Auschwitz Jewish Center receives about 25,000 visitors per year and also works with various populations in intensive programming. We are dedicated to long-term intensive education programming for a variety of audiences. We're currently working with Polish police officers and human rights trainers in the Polish police. We'll work with 200 officers through this program in the next year. And this program is a three-day program that works together with the museum at Auschwitz-Birkenau to train police officers to be aware of hate crimes coming out of, and because of their understanding, of the Holocaust and the role of police and paramilitary units during the Holocaust. On the American side, we work with a variety of populations of American and international students to create in-depth, serious academic programming for them. We have everything from a 5-day program for students who are studying abroad to a 3.5-week program for advanced graduate students on Polish Jewish history and the Holocaust. We also have a program for students from the American Service Academy, so West Point, Annapolis, Air Force, and the Coast Guard Academy. This is a 2.5-week program on the Holocaust and military ethics that takes place in Washington, D.C., here in New York at the Museum of Jewish Heritage, and throughout Poland.
I found out about this through information I received about the fellowship program that you are having in the summer. Can you tell us about that program and who it's directed to?
Sure. So the Auschwitz Jewish Center Fellows Program is a program that began in 2000. It's directed at graduate students in Holocaust history and related fields, so in German studies or European studies, people studying fascism or Jewish history. And in the past few years, we've actually opened it up as well to faculty members, to university faculty who teach the Holocaust but have not made it their primary area of study. So through this program, as I said, it's a 3.5-week program. It's 3 days here in New York and then 3 weeks traveling in Poland. We want to give students a deeper understanding of the Polish case of the Holocaust, of Polish Jewish history, of the Holocaust in the lands that are today Poland, and of the experience of Holocaust memory and identity and controversy, issues of narrative that have come out of the Holocaust. We get a wide variety of students for that program. This year, our students are largely PhD students studying in America and Canada, but they actually come from all over the world. We have a student from the Ukraine, we have a student from Spain, we have a Slovak student, and a woman finishing her PhD in Argentina. So we're really trying to reach the people who will write the next generation of books. We're trying to reach the next generation of scholars and give them an education that they couldn't otherwise get.
Is there anything else that you would like to tell us that we might have left out?
Tell you a little bit about the synagogue, I think, if
okay,
I can.
Sure.
Our synagogue, as I said, is the last standing synagogue in the town of Oshvanshim. It's a Hevrolom Dei Mishnayot synagogue. It's a society for the study of Mishnah. And Oshvanshim was a majority Jewish town before the war. It was a town of 12,000, and 8,000 were Jewish. And it had, we think, between 20 and 30 synagogues for its population of 8,000 Jews. The Hevrolom Dei Mishnayot is the last synagogue to survive. It was the first piece of Jewish communal property to be returned to the Jewish community in post-communist Poland. We refurbished the synagogue from survivors' memories, and while it doesn't have a congregation, it's this incredibly rich, vibrant space because visitors from all over the world come there after or before they visit Auschwitz, and they say Kaddish there, they pray, they use our Torah, but it's also a place where Polish kids who don't live with Jews anymore have an opportunity to learn about Jewish heritage and culture, and they love it, actually. The children of Oshvanshim, the people of Oshvanshim, very much want to learn about the Jews who lived there before, the society their grandparents knew, because so much of what they understand about their town is only about the camp. They're known as Auschwitz still today, even though it's Oshvanshim. And so getting to learn about Oshvanshim's positive multicultural history, the history that existed there for hundreds of years before the camp, is really important to them.
So you found that the local Polish people are really very open to this, contrary to what many people believe.
Yes, they very much are. I think that people's views about Poland are informed very much by the stories many of us have heard from our parents or grandparents. And what we don't take into account, or we can't take into account, I guess, is that their singular experience does not speak to the universal. The people of Oshvanshim are very open to the Auschwitz Jewish Center. For example, we had a program last year called About a Rabbi and a Priest. It was a day-long program that was about the pre-war rabbi and priest in the town of Oshvanshim who were very good friends. And 3,000 local people came to that program. We're a pretty small space. 3,000 people came to that program. They want to learn about this. The town of Oshvanshim is very friendly to us. They help us with funding for certain projects. They've been wonderful supporters of the center. And I think that this image we have, or too many people have, of Poles as anti-Semites does not reflect the current state in Poland. I think Polish Jewish history and Polish Jewish memory is very complex. And when we look at the Poles this way, we're only looking at one piece, whereas today in Poland there's an enormous Philo-Semitism going on. There's Jewish studies departments at the great universities. There's a Jewish culture festival every summer in Krakow that thousands upon thousands of people go to. We also have to remember that Poland has only been dealing with the memory of the Holocaust since the fall of communism. They weren't allowed to deal with this memory in any kind of honest way under communism. And so they're, 24, 25 years, really, since the fall of communism and into that discussion. When we were 25 years out from the Holocaust, that was 1970. We weren't talking about it in America either. Survivors weren't speaking. And so I think we have to give Poland actually credit for the way Holocaust memory is discussed today. You know, there was just this opening of the new Museum of the History of Polish Jews in Warsaw. And at that opening, the president of Poland said, there's no Polish history without Jewish history. I think we, as outsiders, need to recognize where the discussion is in Poland today and how far it's come.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to talk to you.
Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSefarad.com. See you next week.